Welcome back to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly recap of the precious metals markets and the news that moves those markets. Let's take a look at the charts real quick before we jump into things, guys. Starting out with gold, up about 2.5% since our recording last Wednesday, currently at $33.67. But that's not the entire story this week, so we'll definitely zoom in on a chart here in a moment. Silver, actually down about 0.75%, so not too much. A couple pennies down on silver, sitting at $32.40. Platinum, up 1% to $9.65. And palladium, playing catch up, guys, up 3% to $9.65. They're neck and neck again, and I love it when that happens. So enjoying the fist fight there. The S&P is practically dead even since last week, sitting at 56.30. And believe it or not, on a Fed announcement day, guys, we're looking at the dollar up about 0.25 from last week, sitting just under 100 at 99.90. So where do we want to start this week, fellas?
Well, you know, we record on Wednesday afternoons strictly because of the FOMC announcements, right? I remember setting that many years ago where we thought, golly, the news is so substantial when it comes out of the mouth of the Fed chairman.
Yeah, the Fed moves the markets, but not last week.
Well, I mean, not last week. And here we're seeing a little bit of an impact. Gold is down. We're at $3,367 as we record. Yesterday, we were up over $3,430. 3,443, actually, right at the high end of the risk range, as Hedgeye points out, kind of that top that we need to close above. All that being said, not a whole lot. As you said, Miles, what a nothing burger out of the Federal Reserve today.
Right.
But it still moves the markets, right? They don't have to do anything. It really comes down to the press conference afterwards, and that's where you get a little bit of a sense for how they're feeling and looking at things. There was less than a 2% chance of a rate cut today, according to prognosticators.
Sounds
June
about right.
Is down to less than 33%. That's before today's comments, so that'll probably drop too. But they say that they're in a good position to wait and see. I certainly hope that's the case, because we're having to wait and see, and we're not in a good position. So you would hope the Fed would be, but too early to tell on what they should do. They are concerned about a higher risk of increased unemployment and increased inflation because of the tariffs. So that was sort of a political, kind of confrontational, in my opinion, press conference, if you will, taking shots at the tariff policy, but yet nobody knows how the tariff policy is going to play out. Nobody knows where the tariffs are actually going to land.
Yeah, because it's all up in the air still.
Yeah. What are the final numbers? India came out and said that they're agreeing to 0% tariffs, and we'll see what happens there. But anyway, they're likely going to hold at their next meeting as well. And people get discouraged. I mean, it's good for those who are saving and getting some sort of return in your right. cash position, right. right? It's not necessarily good for the big borrower, although mortgage rates are impacted far more by treasury yields than they are by the Federal Reserve lending rate. So there's not a direct correlation there. But the tariff blame game is certainly convenient for them. They say that it's delaying their objective of maximum employment and minimal inflation. And they've had 3 years to fix this issue. So delay based on a recent cycle of tariffs, I don't know.
Well, and it seems like President Trump is able to raise the debt ceiling. People are very critical of that. But there's still a lot of Treasury debt to be refinanced during his term in office. And they never really address that. We can see what the numbers are. You've got a chart to put up on how much has to be refied in the next few years.
It's a concerning chart. I mean, we've talked about it on this show. Some people have the estimate closer to $9 trillion of debt to refinance in 2025. This image from Bravos Research is showing $7 trillion, and it is a sliding scale in the coming years. But Rob, you figured it out. I mean, it's north of $25 trillion of our debt that has to be refinanced just in the next 7 years.
I think it's shorter than that.
Well, and the problem is that you've got higher interest rates where you're refinancing. It's not moved in your favor. It just means
definitely
the debt service.
Yeah, it's like the credit card company raising the rates as you're loaded with credit card debt.
There you go. And it doesn't bode well for our fiscal situation,
no.
Which is a primary motivator for all of us owning gold, along with the dollar. What has the dollar done, Miles? Is there any substantial change this week with the price moves?
We had that break below 100, which took place back really just right after tariffs, April 10th. But it was on a bit of a fall prior to that. We peaked out back in the beginning of January, the dollar index sitting over 110. Since then, we're down. We bottomed April 20th at 98. So realistically, you could argue it's on a little bit of a climb since then. But arguably, when you have that type of decline in the largest thing on earth, the US dollar, you know, the largest economic powerhouse that's ever existed, to drop 12, 13% in a month or two is pretty staggering. So to have a little bit of a bounce here is no big deal.
Well, and I think that's a critical point. The dollar is the single largest financial asset on the globe, and it's liquid. So it can take a lot of punishment. It's huge.
Right.
It can take a lot of punishment. I think the long-term outlook for the dollar, since we price it versus all the other currencies, I don't really see the dollar going to zero unless everybody else's currencies go to zero, because that's something that you hear people say, well, the dollar is going to crash. Well, it's valued versus everybody else. So I think the dollar is going to remain relatively even with all the other currencies. I mean, there'll be some back and forth and, Miles, like you like to say, fist fights, but that's my opinion. But I tell you what is concerning me is this top-down market being driven by the major central banks. Now, the three of us were at a financial conference in Las Vegas 5 years ago as we were rolling out our vaulted program. And everybody was crypto. Everybody was influencers from all over the world. And they would stop by and visit us and scratch their heads. Gold? Who does gold anymore? Granted, now that was 5 years ago. And one of the companies that we contract with that tracks the influencers that send traffic to our website through a big party on the strip. I went, you all were there. I don't drink. I put Ernie Weaver on my name tag because I was like, these are not our people. And one of the principals from this big company came up to me in the middle of everything and said, hey, you've been pointed out as the guy I should talk to about gold. I'm like, okay. He had, I have a question. People who buy gold, are they really weird? And I've never heard that before, and I just thought about it. And you mean weird
birds
like...
birds of a feather, Rob.
Right. It's like, you mean weird like buy gold, get a bomb shelter weird?
Like Miles weird?
Yeah.
Oh.
So he looks at me, he goes, yeah, buy gold, get a bomb shelter weird. That's kind of what I mean. And I just looked at him. I said, no, to the degree that people have lost faith in the financial system, that will dictate the percentage they allocate to gold. Now, here we are 5 years later. And what are the big kids doing, the big central banks? They are changing their allocation from fiat currencies, whether it's dollars, euro, yen, renminbi, doesn't matter. They are increasing their percentage allocation to gold. And what does that tell you? I wasn't trying to be prophetic 5 years ago, but the very people who manage the world's economy and the world's currencies have increased their percentage allocation to gold. Why? Because they're losing faith in the financial system, and yet they control it.
You know what's ironic about that, Rob? When was that seminar, that conference we went to?
It was 5 years ago, right before COVID.
Exactly.
Right as COVID was breaking out.
February 2020. So what's interesting about that, yeah, we all came back from Vegas and had COVID before COVID was cool. Yeah, we all came back from Vegas. We were sick for 2 weeks. And as soon as I was healthy enough to go back to work, the offices were closed. So there you go. What's interesting about that, Rob, is you didn't have to wait 5 years. You had to wait about 5 weeks before we saw what happens when that sentiment changed. Mm. And there was no more silver dollars available to pick up anywhere in the United States. So it can change on a dime. And you know what you're getting into here, the central bank buying an increase of central bank percentage holdings of physical precious metals. You know, it wasn't too long ago that it was 100%. That was 40, 50 years ago. And ever since the 1970s and Nixon and everything else, those numbers for the IMF globally got as low as 10%. So internationally, IMF, 10%, slightly below 10% backing in physical precious metals. Well, that's increased back up to what, 20 to 25 as of now.
And they're still increasing. They don't really care what the price is. They really don't.
No, I mean, this is when gold shines is not, I mean, granted, it's up 26% this year, but that's not what people buy it for.
No.
Now, I would argue that it's not a hedge. In my opinion, it's an excellent performance asset over time. That being said, you're exactly right. And it's not about the return on the investment. It's about the return of your investment and the return of the money that you put in there, because it's not going to ever go to zero. So they don't care that it's collecting a little bit of dust.
No, and everybody has a different reason for owning it. Spoke to a guy today. Yeah, I inherited some Krugerrands from my dad. I'll probably never sell them. I'll give them to my kids. I'm like, well, Brian, that's one reason to own it as a legacy investment. I have a other client called me yesterday. He put in about 500 grand. Oh, golly, 25 years ago. He was just calling in to check and see what it's worth, and it's pushing 2 million now. He wanted to know, as like what you were saying, how am I doing? And then I had another big broker who manages over 1,000 reps under his line of business with a major brokerage firm. And literally speaking, all he wanted it for was in case the wheels came off, that he could have it as money. And I still get people calling me, hey, Rob, what good is gold and silver if nobody has any money to buy it with?
Yeah, you can't eat it.
You right?
You hear that all the time.
No, right.
You can't eat your
missing the
$10
point.
Bill either.
Right. It's like, but, come on, bucko, you're kind of missing the point, because the dollar is a great means of exchange, but it's a terrible store of value. And gold and silver can be both if it comes to that. So there's so many reasons why people own it. And a lot of people do own it for insurance. I mean, they're like, hey, I have this as a hedge against everything else. I'll never forget the guy in Rhode Island. Talked to him over 30 years ago. And we were talking about doing maybe 50 grand in gold. And at the end of the conversation, he goes, you know, I've got 9 crews that are building right now 12 to 13 different houses here in Rhode Island. I'd much rather put my money into my crews and keep them busy and keep building houses. The market is booming here, than buy your gold. Sorry, Rob, you're a nice guy. A year or two later, all the banks in Rhode Island failed. And I never heard back from him, but I'm sure that his money went poof because they were not part of the FDIC.
You know, you guys talked about COVID too, which really speaks to today. I mean, we could be on the verge of that again. So
yeah.
Go back and think, what would you have done with your portfolio had you known that COVID was going to hit? And I'm not trying to be a doomsayer, and I certainly am not a fan of the sky is falling. I'm just merely talking economically. Now, on one hand, we've got conflicting data, which I think is why the Federal Reserve is frozen.
Okay.
Because in the first quarter, GDP was way down. That's because people were front loading the tariff concerns, right? So you have this massive boost in imports. Well, that skews the data, and that drove the GDP numbers down, okay? Because GDP is based on a lot of moving parts. Well, now you're actually starting to see some impact. The reports coming out of ports are negative. So right now, there's a drop-off in imports from China coming into the U.S. ports by more than 50%. That harkens back to COVID-type stuff. Remember,
right.
Supply chain disruption. And we're also down about, depending on the port, 35% or more on exports to China. So you are going to see a stagnation. And remember, like a 50% decline in containers means 50% less stuff arriving into the U.S. And what happens is it's just a matter of time before they sell through their existing inventory, things that are on the shelves now, and you've got to replace them, which again reminds us of the COVID era. And that's when you're going to see shortages, and that's when you're going to see the price hikes. And so there are some things left to play out here, which, again, inflation being one of them. Gold is good for that. Where are you saving? Are you saving in worthless dollars, or are you saving in tangible commodity?
Well, what's interesting about that, Tori, is as we've watched various forms of capital getting pushed back into your, what's the new nickname now? Is it Magnificent Seven? The digital
Mag 7.
Mag 7, yeah. So yeah.
I lose every three years. Every 3 or 4 years, we've got a new term for whatever the new best stocks are.
Right.
Things that I would never put money into. But as you've got this flood of money going into these to continue to push like the S&P further, I always like to, since you bring it up, I always like to kind of cross-check and say, okay, how's the shipping of those goods going?
Terrible.
And I'm looking at like the Dow Jones Transportation
Terrible.
Average.
It's down 4,000 points since its peak in November.
Yeah. And really? The peak, yeah, it's still down about 22% from the peak back in November. And here's what else about that. With all the post-COVID growth that we've had, since the peak in October 2021, the Dow Jones Transportation Average is up 4%. So the transport average has increased 4% over the last 4 to 5 years compared to where, say, the S&P is going. So we're looking at arguably, primarily, if not exclusively, what's the word I'm looking for? Manipulated market. I mean, I hate to use the scary M word that, you know, sends everybody running, but we're looking at a heavily external investment driven stock market right now that is not based on the production of goods and services for the general right. public, but based exclusively on growth driven investment focus coming out of Wall Street. Now, I don't know where that leads us to. We're looking at the gold price up, what, $1,500, $1,600, 50, 60% over the last 13, 14 months with almost no semblance of return showing yet. Now, I actually do, as a chart guy, it is a gold show, so I'm desperately trying to drag us back to the topic of gold. As a chart guy, I actually kind of like the fact that even though we were pushing up here leading into the Fed announcement this week, we've had a little bit of a failure to get back to the highs from a couple weeks ago because gold needs to take a breather. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing needs to go up that far. And with things like, Rob, you brought up a moment ago, just the sheer incalculable amount of debt that is getting rolled over this year at substantially higher interest rates, the expectation on inflation continues. So I don't think gold is anywhere near done. Now, I don't care because I'm going to continue to buy gold no matter what the price is, which it seems to be the theme of this week's show. I don't care what the price is. I'll keep buying it as long as the government spends more money than they make. We're going to see these types of runs take place because the big boys aren't done yet and the little guys like us haven't even started.
No, even in the ETF sector, you know, it's not just in the coin and bar world that we're talking about, the retail sector. That can include ETFs, for example, like GLD, sitting at, what, 31 million ounces in GLD? Well, it was 41 million during COVID and 44 million at its peak in 2012 after the financial crisis. So you're nowhere close to the number of ounces held just in GLD with much more money in the system than there was back then. A lot of money's been created since then.
Sure has.
But there are concerns. It's, you know, the central banks are putting a floor in the price. There's no doubt. And this is an Eastern thing and a central bank thing. But when the retail investor steps in, it's almost always driven by greed.
Or fear.
Or fear. Yep. And when that greed turns to fear, that's when you see the price run like we did in 2011, you know, starting from 700 up to 1900. Nothing like that right now.
No.
Everybody's just sort of head in sand, waiting. And as Neil Howe describes it, we're in the middle of a fourth turning.
Oh, he is all over it. Yeah.
All over it. And this isn't just a domestic U.S. thing. This is global. And that global fourth turning ends up being very, very painful before you come out with improved systems. But first, it's a nationalism. It's an authoritarianism. It's these movements that we're seeing that Trump is representing and kicking off that has yet to play out. The problem is 30% of our debt is held by foreign central banks. And that's something that yields a lot of influence. We're going to raise the debt ceiling. We're going to keep spending more than we bring in. We're going to be at $40 trillion this time next year when we're talking on this program.
Yes, we are.
In national debt. And unfortunately, to the tune of almost $2 trillion a year, I don't see that slowing down even with tightening of the belt, because the spending is just too rampant. So,
well, and I think a key point you just brought up is when people ask us, well, when is gold no longer going higher, or when is it going to be over? And it, I think, simply put, well, when the government stops spending more than they're bringing in, when they can finally balance their budget, I think you could look for gold to top, if it can be sustained.
Well, then, and then that's taking out any other factors.
Exactly.
You know, the news that moves the markets, India, India, Pakistan, we alluded to it last week, geopolitical tensions are ramping back up.
India is sending rockets over and their planes are running out of gas because they'll never admit to the fact that the Pakistanis shot them down.
Shot them down, yeah. Five jets that ran out of fuel. I like it. Yeah, it's growing.
It is growing.
Ukraine
their
and Russia.
Gas guy is going to lose his job. He's got gas in those planes. Yeah,
that's right.
Dang. Goodness.
So eyes on the geopolitical scene.
Yeah,
certainly eyes on the economic scene. The job market is hot, way better than expected.
And Israel's
Trump
taking over Gaza.
Yet. Yeah.
We don't hear
about
it. They're moving in. They're taking it over. They're going to flatten it. They're going to go forward with Trump's plan, it sounds like. Just put a bulldozer to it.
More verbal shots across the bow of the Iranians.
Oh, yeah.
Russia's not going to honor this ceasefire for long. And now we're moving missile defense systems from Israel to Ukraine. It's all building, you guys. And that's another reason that it's very, very wise right now to be not only holding on to, but adding to your gold holdings.
Why would you not?
So that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, do the normal YouTube things. We always appreciate it. Better yet, you can swing on over to our website if you'd like to learn more about McIlvaney Precious Metals. We can be reached at McIlvaney.com. You can find us on Twitter at ICA Gold or Facebook at McIlvaney Financial. And as always, if you'd like to speak with one of the advisors here about your personal precious metals portfolio, you can reach us at 800-525-9556. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.